This is number 0053, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0053. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, author Garth Sundom has written a book called Brain Candy: Science, Paradoxes, Logic, and Elogic to Nourish Your Neurons. How did this topic come to be?
My wife is a PhD psychologist. My mom's also a PhD psychologist. How Freudian is that? But my dad is a former president of the American Accounting Association. So I live at this weird juncture between sort of the feeling mind and the numbers mind. And that's where this whole thing kind of comes together. It's at that nexus, you know. So it's the fun sort of feeling side of things, but made tweaky to explain things you'd never think could be explainable.
You'll also meet Carrie Kasem. That would be Casey Kasem's little girl. She's a broadcaster in her own right, host of the Carrie Kasem podcast, and also co-host of the syndicated radio show Sixth Sense with Motley Crue founder Nikki Sixx. How does her dad feel about her following in his footsteps?
You know, he's always been supportive with anything I've ever done. Really supportive. He said, you know, just get your education and I'll support you in whoever and whatever you want to be. And he's always been like that. I know he's very proud of me. And I don't know if it shocked him that I went into radio. I think he kind of saw it before I did.
Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabbie, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge in New York City. He has a thought or two on the New York mosque issue.
For anybody to imply that there's hostility of New Yorkers against Muslims is complete crap. And the reason for that, if all the Muslims walked off their jobs tomorrow, we would starve to death. And we certainly wouldn't be able to get a taxi cab. I mean, a great percentage of the workers in the taxi industry are Muslim, and a great percentage of the people in the food industry are Muslim. That doesn't mean there aren't doctors and lawyers and what have you, but they're a very important part of the city.
And of course, there's lots and lots and lots of stuff and an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0053, is Ira Gladstone, Mr. Fix-It here in Montreal. He can fix anything, anything but a broken heart. And he specializes in restoration. He can tackle stone, ivory, silver, paintings, crystal, light fixtures, porcelain, and the list goes on. If it's worth fixing, he can fix it. Check out his website at www.themrfixit.com. That's www.themrfixit.com. And thank you very much, Ira, for being the guest later on this edition of The Stuff File. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? And we start off with a story from London, England. You know, Friday the 13th proved especially unlucky for one 13-year-old British boy who was struck by lightning at exactly 13:13 on that much-feared date. The teenager was among a crowd of 170,000 people watching an aeronautical display at the Lowestoft Seafront Air Festival, that's in the east of England, when he was zapped by a bolt of lightning. He suffered minor burns and is expected to make a full recovery. Another teenager and a woman standing near to the unnamed boy were also struck and received treatment. I hope he goes out and buys a lotto ticket now, because he's due. Next, we go to France. French police have arrested two teenage girls they say stole hundreds of euros from unsuspecting cash machine customers after distracting them by flashing their breasts. The 14-year-old girls, that's right, 14-year-old girls, were taken to the Paris prosecutor's office to face charges while a 12-year-old accomplice was placed in a home. The girls first struck last week when they approached a man withdrawing cash from an ATM in the 6th District in Paris. One of the girls tried to distract him by sticking a newspaper under his nose. When that failed, she opened her shirt and grabbed his crotch while the other girl swiped 300 euros. That's about 385 bucks U.S. The girls struck again with the help of the 12-year-old a few days later, using the same method to steal 500 euros from a woman. Wow. 14. Huh. And they already know the power of their breasts. It doesn't take long. We go to Mexico City for our next story. A bold truck jacking in Mexico has yielded thieves peanuts. Federal police say two suspects hijacked a truck containing 17 tons of peanuts at gunpoint on the outskirts of Mexico City. Police say the truck was listing to one side and they decided to pull it over, only to see a struggle taking place inside the truck's cab. The driver said he was forced at gunpoint to lie on the floor of the cab, but was able to call for help when police pulled the hijacked truck over. A police statement said the two suspects were arrested and ended up empty-handed. They did all this for peanuts. Peanuts. On to Port Angeles, Washington. A man in a banana costume. And if I had a nickel for every story I started with that sentence... Yeah, anyway, a man in a banana costume is accused of exposing himself and brandishing a shotgun while riding around with a bunch of friends in Washington State. The Clallam County Sheriff's Office said the 21-year-old was arrested for investigation of indecent exposure and reckless endangerment. Police first received a report of the costumed man exposing himself at a restaurant. Sheriff Sergeant Randy Piper says they also drove through a Port Angeles neighborhood where the man got out brandishing the gun. After his arrest, authorities say the man couldn't explain why he was costumed. Well, I mean, doesn't everyone have a banana costume? The other man also was arrested, but an 18-year-old woman in the car was allowed to split. Banana costume, split. Okay. Anyway, the banana costume was seized as evidence. So there you go. Meanwhile, a couple of stories from the police reports that I just need to share with you, and just the way they're written. In July, Manuel Lefty Hernandez, age 28, was charged in Springfield, Massachusetts, with snatching a man's wallet, which he probably did with his left hand because it's the only hand he has. If he had had a weapon, police could have charged him with a felony, but it was only a misdemeanor because Hernandez was unarmed. And a frightening August headline in the Union Grass Valley, California newspaper. How about this one? This is an actual quote. SWAT team requested for violent midgets. Again, if I had a nickel. In fact, they were steroid-using bodybuilder midgets headed by an apparently particularly dangerous lead female. That's right, steroid-using bodybuilder midgets. Again, another sentence I don't get to say very often. Under the headline of Least Competent Police, in March, four NYPD officers acting on department intelligence, and department intelligence here could be an oxymoron, went to the home of Walter and Rose Martin in Brooklyn, New York, looking for a suspect and broke a window as they worked their way inside. The Martins, retired and in their 80s, were clean, and a police spokesman later admitted that officers had wrongly visited or raided the Martins' home more than, wait for it, 50 times, 50, since 2002, because of a stubborn computer glitch. When the software was originally installed, an operator testing it mindlessly typed in a random address, but it happened to be the Martins' house, and thus the visits and raids began. The Martins say they had been assured several times that the problem had been corrected, but evidently their address has wormed its way too deep into the system, and somebody, anybody, nobody, they can't get it out. So there you go. They just sit around the house, I guess, waiting for the cops to show up. Wow. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? Strange facts, fun puzzles, and personality quizzes are like steroids for your brain. The human brain needs to be fed, and with his book, Brain Candy, Science, Paradoxes, Logic, and Illogic to Nourish Your Neurons, which is published by Three Rivers Press, Garth Sundum gives info that's delicious and nutritious for the most powerful organ in your body. Garth is in Ojai, California, and joins us through the wonderful world of Skype-to-Skype communications. Hi, Garth. How are you?
Hi. Great, Peter. How are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for being on the program with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So how did this book come to be? Because we had you on the program before, on the old radio show.
Yeah.
In a different context. How did this book come to be?
Well, my wife is a PhD psychologist. My mom's also a PhD psychologist. Like, how Freudian is that? But my dad is a former president of the American Accounting Association. So I live at this weird juncture between sort of the feeling mind and the numbers mind, and that's where this whole thing kind of comes together. It's at that nexus, you know. So it's the fun sort of feeling side of things, but made tweaky to explain things you'd never think could be explainable.
Okay, on the fun side, I see the advantage of having a book like this. On the more serious side, people talk about the idea that, you know, if you don't use it, you'll lose it. And we're seeing situations where people are dealing with dementia and all kinds of serious inflictions of the mind. Is this the kind of thing that keeps the mind fresh?
You know, I looked into that a lot. There's so much out there right now with brain training, and there's so much, I hate to say it, but there's so much bad stuff out there right now with brain training that I took a real serious look at all the journals kind of combing through for what actually is brain training. And it turns out there is one simple secret, and that is new experiences. You know, by the time you've done your 375th Sudoku, all you're doing with another Sudoku is getting better at Sudoku. But, you know, if you wake up in the morning and, like, you know, read a new section of the newspaper or take a new route to work or, you know, like, go to a different restaurant or something, your brain physically rewires itself to be able to deal with these new situations. And that flexibility carries over into intelligence and other areas of your life. So the one secret to brain training is new experiences. I tried to pack brain candy with as many of these new experiences as possible in a way that would also be fun.
Okay, so let me pull some of the things straight from the press release. Why should you be writing bad poetry?
Yeah, this is great. So, okay, there's a ton of research right now on PTSD for obvious, terrible reasons. One thing with trauma is you don't want it stuck in your unconscious. You want it out. But reliving that trauma too vividly can be something that people, you know, may or may not be ready for. So instead of writing very vivid descriptions or even speaking extremely vivid descriptions of your trauma, one study found that the optimal level of connection with your trauma was sappy general verse, i.e. bad poetry. So writing very generally about an experience kept it from getting stuck down deep in your unconscious, but didn't pull it up in a way that was too vivid for people to deal with. So if you have a bad experience, whatever that bad experience is, come home and write some bad poetry. It'll help you get over it.
You know, it's funny you mention that because I'm sure you've heard of the term earworm.
Yeah.
Sure. Like a song you can't get out of your head.
Absolutely.
I had an opportunity to talk to somebody in the past about earworms, and they say the way to get past an earworm is to sing the song completely. Get it out. And that's
funny.
And it's very similar to what you just said.
Oh, I like that. I never heard that. Hey, here's something funny. So check this out. Speaking of earworms.
Yeah.
So there is a neurological explanation for why holiday music drives us crazy. You know, you walk by that window and you hear that pa-rumpa pum pum one more time and you want to, you know, kick the nearest elf. So when you listen to something like, you know, the Beatles' White Album or Stravinsky or, for me, you know, Coltrane or something, your first listen, you might not even like it. And it may take multiple listens to kind of get into it, to understand it. And each time you listen to it, you may hear something new and understand it a little more and thus like it a little bit more. On the opposite end of the spectrum is holiday music. You're supposed to get it in the 6 seconds you're walking by the Macy's window and, you know, it recalls some nostalgia or whatever and you make a purchase. But if you listen to that for more than those 6 seconds, the wheels in your brain start to spin. Your brain wants more. And if it doesn't get it, like the Beatles' White Album or Stravinsky or Coltrane, your brain gets mad and the mad brain gets feisty And that's why you want to kick elves when you hear pa-rum-pa-pum-pum.
Well, I don't know. Maybe I'm the odd man out here. I happen to love holiday music.
You are wired differently than the rest of us, Peter.
I guess that's what it is. I guess that's what it is. So one of the things I understand you talk about in the book is the art of the unapology apology.
These are the apologies that everyone has heard. You know, you turn on CNN and there are many sneaky ways to skate around apologies with pure truth, but pure avoidance. I'll have to blog some of those. If I get into them now, they're going to get a little long-winded. But if you guys look me up, I promise to blog them this week.
Excellent, excellent. Now, how did you go about plotting out a book like this?
You know, I didn't. See, okay, I thought about, you know, usually I'm a very methodical writer. You know, I plan everything out ahead of time and I know what I'm going to dive into. This one, I decided that, you know, my brain's not that unique. So I just let it have free rein, and whatever my brain liked, I stuck in the book. You know, anything that I found totally fascinating and had to bring up in dinner conversation, my poor wife is going to kill me. My dog's the only one who'll talk to me still because I, you know, interject, you know, weird factoids from the backwaters of the brain into like everything I say these days. But, you know, I would wake up in the morning, fully caffeinate myself, and dive into, you know, journals of what's hot in brain science right now. And when I found something that, you know, I couldn't live without, I would, you know, either call the person up who had done the study or, you know, look for interesting sources and write it up. So this book is packed with everything that I thought was totally too cool to live without.
So in reading this book, Brain Candy, will the reader become smarter, or, on a more nefarious point, is this like the gateway drug to wanting more brain candy?
That's a great question. Is it the gateway drug to wanting more brain candy? God, I hope so. You know, we don't get enough of this kind of brain candy. You know, the idea that our brain only wants tabloids and, you know, candy corn, I don't know. It seems like the paradigm has shifted a little bit past that to me, where what our brain really wants is to be engaged, you know, not in a way that's, you know, like reading an economics textbook, but in a way that, you know, why does country music kill? You know, that's funny. And why does red beat blue at the Olympics? It does. Like, that's a fact. And you know, why does it do that? How do you persuade people? What is our brain good at? What is our brain bad at? You know, I think this is fun. To me, this is candy. And, you know, I hope it is to other people, too. It's certainly fun for me. I had a blast writing this book.
Okay, so you started off by talking about the big brains in your family, those you grew up with, yeah, and the one you married.
Yep.
what do they think of this book?
You know, so it's funny. My take is different than any of my family's take. That my dad, for example, you can see him reflected in the game theory puzzles. There's this great puzzle in there about how there's this battle of the sexes puzzle where you distribute these preference points across this neat grid and it solves what movie you should watch tonight. That is all my dad. Or these cool games in, you know, trust and fairness where you're giving coins and taking coins with neat rules and, you know, how to win Prisoner's Dilemma and Battleship and Checkers and all these cool things. That's purely my dad. The other side of the spectrum, my wife is very honestly, professionally interested in the unconscious in a way that is deeper than I'll ever understand, but she's very good at it. And where that's reflected is in interesting discussions of the collective unconscious, interesting discussions of, you know, the deeper seated unconscious influence on emotion and actions. That would be sort of my wife's side of thing. It's You know, it's very different having numbers and emotions all floating around in our weird ether of our brain, and I don't know, being expressed in ways that make us either do the right thing or the wrong thing, or, you know, who knows, the predictive thing or the emotional thing, or, you know, there's huge jumbles inside this electric sausage inside our skulls, and there are very different ways of understanding it. And, you know, I hope I packed enough of both into the book.
The electric sausage that is our skulls. I shall remember that forever.
Nice.
The book is called Brain Candy: Science, Paradoxes, Logic, and Illogic to Nourish Your Neurons, written by Garth Sundam. And Garth, I thank you once again for being on the program.
Thanks for having me, Peter. I always love talking with you.
Garth Sundam, author of Brain Candy: Science, Paradoxes, Logic, and Illogic to Nourish Your Neurons, which is published by Three Rivers Press. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0053. And you'll find links to Garth's website, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order the book directly.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey. Your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands, just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
You're experiencing The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Sit back, relax, let it rattle around between your ears, tickling your cerebellum, and enjoy.
And still to come on the program, we'll meet Casey Kasem's daughter, Carrie Kasem. Plus, we'll hear from Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, who shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. And, of course, we have an idiot of the day and lots more stuff. As a matter of fact, we have more stuff right here, right now. We go to Bedford, Virginia for our next story. A driver has been convicted of animal cruelty and fined $100 after Virginia authorities found a goat stuffed in the trunk of her car. Bedford County Sheriff's deputies discovered the goat bound and in the trunk during a drunken driving checkpoint in June. And you know, when cops stop people in drunk driving checkpoint situations, I'm guessing they never anticipated livestock in somebody's trunk. Talk about the adventures of police work. Anyway, Fiona Ann Enderby of Washington, D.C. told police she bought the goat from a farmer to give to four passengers in her car who are from Kenya but reside in Lynchburg in central Virginia. And what the four Kenyans were going to do with the goat, your guess is as good as mine. Maybe even more sordid. The goat was panting heavily, and animal control officers say the temperature in the trunk was about 94 degrees Fahrenheit. The goat is now living at a Bedford County farm. So there you go. Still on the road and kind of dealing with animals. Kind of. We go to Britain for our next story. Cricket star Graham Swan told a police officer who stopped him for drunk driving that he had to go out to buy screwdrivers to rescue his trapped cat. That's what Graham said. The 31-year-old had been out with friends when he returned to his Nottinghamshire home and discovered his pet trapped under the floorboards. He said he then got into his white Porsche KN, and was driving to a supermarket in the wee hours of the morning on April the 2nd when he was pulled over. That was the testimony in Nottingham Magistrates Court. Police Constable Stephen Dennis said he decided to pull Swan over initially because he was driving a high-performance car in an area where there had been a spate of burglaries. Here's a quote. Mr. Swan stated he had been out that evening and had come back to find his cat trapped under the floorboards in his house. He had gone to the store to fetch some screwdrivers to remove some floorboards, Dennis told the court. His speech was slightly slurred, but he was compliant. He was slightly upset due to the fact that his cat was stuck under the floor and what had just happened. The officer said Swan, who, by the way, is third in the International Cricket Council's World Bowling Rankings, then admitted he shouldn't have probably been driving that night. A blood test showed that his blood alcohol level was 0.83. The legal limit in Britain, at least in this region of Britain, is 0.80. Swan denies one charge of drunk driving and the trial continues. So he was kind of drunk. Well, according to the law, he was definitely drunk, but he was, you know, kind of drunk. This next guy is really drunk. This is a story out of Bethany, New York. Authorities said a Western New York man whose license expired 33 years ago. And again, why are these people still on the road? I don't get it. Anyway, he's been charged with driving while intoxicated after police said he drove a van 11 miles without one of its tires. The Genesee County Sheriff's Office said another motorist reported seeing a tire falling off of a van weaving on the road in Bethany. Deputies later arrested 61-year-old Dwayne Bush at his home in Bethany, which is 32 miles southwest of Rochester. Deputies said the van traveled 11 miles through the rural town without a rear right tire. He must have done some serious damage to the road without a tire on the car. I mean, that's just got to gnaw up asphalt. Anyway, Bush was charged with aggravated DWI and unlicensed operation of a motor vehicle. Deputies said his blood alcohol level was more than three times above the legal limit of 0.08. So there you go. Okay, so next we go from extreme drunk to extremely high. The 4 a.m. quiet in a neighborhood in Roberts, Wisconsin, was shattered by shotgun blasts. Sheriff's deputies report that Archie R. Stone, that's right, his last name actually is Stone, age 40, who was visiting his mother, was, quote, not in touch with reality, unquote. Once he was in custody, investigators determined that Stone believed evil clowns were attacking his mother's home. That's right, evil clowns were attacking his mother's home, so he grabbed a shotgun to repel them. He fired about 22 rounds into the walls and ceilings and claimed he had killed a number of clowns. Stone's mother and father fled during the rampage, and he fired at them too, but missed. Stone allegedly admitted to the deputies that he was stoned on an unspecified hallucinogen. He has pleaded not guilty to reckless endangerment and firearms charges and is undergoing psychiatric evaluation. That's probably a good idea. Meanwhile, two men in Cedro Woolley, Washington, decided to try a barrel ride. Yeah, I never heard of it either, but here's how it works if you want to try this at home. First, you dump 4 gallons of methanol into a 55-gallon drum, then you sit on it and drop in a match. Yeah, what could go wrong with this, huh? Apparently, it was supposed to slide across the parking lot like a rocket, according to Fire Chief Dean Klinger. But the drum was sealed, so instead it just blew up. Blowed up real good. Yeah. One end of the barrel was found 120 feet away. The men did get an exciting ride in a chopper to a burn center where they are in serious condition. Officials didn't release the men's names or ages. Physical age is unknown. Mental age is somewhere around 12, I'm guessing. Although, most 12-year-olds I know are brighter than this. But anyway, there you go. And you know, there was a good chance that these two clowns could have made it to Idiot of the Day. But they did not. We'll get to that a little later. But right now, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. On the line with us right now is Carrie Kasem. She is a very, very busy lady. She anchors her own show. That's the Carrie Kasem Podcast. She also co-hosts the nationally syndicated radio show Six Sense with Motley Crue's founder Nikki Sixx. And she is Casey Kasem's little girl, proving that the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. She joins us now from Los Angeles. Hi, Carrie. How are you?
I'm good, Peter. How are you doing?
I'm fine. Thanks for being on the program with us. So as I said in the intro, you are very busy. You seem to be doing a lot of things.
Yeah, you know, I love to work. I think that's what keeps me sane and what keeps me happy.
So let's start off by talking about your podcast.
Okay. I actually, it's very interesting. I never thought about podcasting until everybody that I was on LA for, on an LA for about 5, 6, 7 years on a 97.1, the FM talk station out here. And when that flipped formats, everybody went to podcasting. I mean, almost every person on that station started a podcast. And I was kind of the last one to get into it, and as soon as I did, I fell in love with podcasting. And so I'm sure, you know, as you know, it's just such a great medium. It's so much fun. And my following kind of came with me, and I thought it was just a great way to kind of stay on the air without being on the air. And I also have the show Nikki Sixx. We play rock and roll. We talk about lifestyle. We have tons of his friends on who happen to be like, you know, these unbelievable musicians. And I do, I actually have a syndicated, it's a mortgage show that I do. I work 6, 7 days a week, but I love what I do, and it's taken me a while to get here, but I'm very happy about it.
A syndicated mortgage show. That must be an interesting thing, especially in this day and age with the economy the way it is, foreclosures and all that's going on. It must be in the middle of it doing a mortgage show.
You know, it's interesting because I work for a company. It's called Network Capital Funding, and they're their own bank, and they loan their own money. So this is what got me, and I've actually been doing finance and mortgage shows for the last 5 years. So they contacted me, and they say they wanted to do a show with me. They have an interest rate that is, and I'm going to sound like I'm an infomercial for a second, but at 3.375. And nobody in the country has that rate. Nobody. And they're like, we're giving this rate because we bought money in bulk and we can put our own interest rate on it. So I've never been on a show that had so many phone calls in my life. And I've been in radio for 15 years. And I have never had a show, I mean, with so many phone calls.
Mm. Now, in addition to that, I understand you've also done some other things. You also love motorcycles, I understand.
Yes, I love motorcycles, yes.
and you've even had a chance to showcase that on your program, correct?
A little bit. You know, I did a TV show where I was on motorcycles called Super Bikes. It was on the Speed Channel. I also built my own bike on Builder Bus. It was on what station was that on? I can't remember. And then I did a web series where I took my motorcycle across the country and ending up in Sturgis. Which happens to actually be this in the next week. So that was, you know, I love riding. I've been riding for a very long time, and anything I can do on my motorcycle, it's just worth it.
Where do you find the time to do all the things that you do?
Oh, gosh. I wish I had more time. There's not enough. I'm telling you, I need another 10 hours in the day. I always feel like I'm not getting stuff done because there's so much to do. But, you know, I'd rather be busy than not busy.
You mentioned that you've been in radio for 15 years. I said in the introduction that you are Casey Kasem's little girl. So was there ever any doubt that you were going to go into the family business?
Yes, I actually wanted nothing to do with radio. I was going to be a singer and be, you know, be a movie star, and that, you know, I went to acting school and I grew up doing musicals, and it was really weird. I started acting. I acted for a few years and was singing. All of a sudden, I got this kind of hosting job, and I loved it. I said, wait a second, I can be myself. And then I started to become a talk radio junkie. And all I listened to was talk radio for years. So I said, you know what? I want to do talk radio. It was this, just this epiphany I had, and I went, whoa, wait a second. I then I did a year of broadcasting school, learned how to work a board, you know, cut the commercials together, and just really learned how to kind of DJ. But I didn't want to DJ. I wanted to do talk radio. So I ended up working for MTV for a year. I lived in Singapore for a year and did MTV. It was kind of a VJ out there, which was really fun. And I just fell in love with hosting, and I fell in love with radio. So when I came back, I pitched a show to 97.1 for talk radio. That was about 2 years later I did that when I came back. And before that, I had a couple radio shows that weren't live, but they were interview shows. And it was really, I just loved it. I loved being myself. And then when I got to talk radio, and I could just kind of pick my own topics and then have those phones ring and be able to talk to people, to argue with people, to agree with people, to empathize. I loved it. It was just, I'd rather, if I could pick one medium for the rest of my life, it would be radio.
Okay, so after all these years of doing other things and basically trying to avoid what it is that your dad is famous for, you then decide that radio is your passion. What did he think of this transformation in you?
He's always been supportive with anything I've ever done. Really supportive. He said, you know, just get your education and I'll support you in whoever and whatever you want to be. And he's always been like that. I know he's very proud of me. And I don't know if it shocked him that I went into radio. I think he kind of saw it before I did. But I love my dad I'm so in awe of him. He's just such an amazing talent, an amazing man. And, you know, if I can be half of what my father is, I'm going to be doing all right.
I know he's been retired for a while and he hasn't given any interviews or anything. How is he doing?
He's good. You know, I mean, he retired a year ago. Gosh, I can't believe it. That goes by so fast. He does little things here and there still. He's still doing, he just did this really, like the Sprint commercial that was hilarious. And he does little voiceover things here and there. And, you know, Shaggy and Scooby-Doo, he didn't do that too long ago. But he still does little things here and there. He's just retired from the countdown.
And again, with all the things that you do, it seems to be that you have one idea after another and you pursue it and you seem to have pretty good success with it. Is there anything you want to do that you haven't been able to do yet?
You know, right now, I've been trying to produce some. I've created some TV shows, and I've been pitching that, and for years. And it takes a while. Sometimes the production comes to us and say, "Yes, we love it," and then they'll shelve it. So right now, I'm back. I'm just in full motion with pitching a couple television shows. One is a show around motorcycles, which I love. One is around, I'm a vegan. So one is around a vegan chef who's just amazing, and it would be a really fun show. So I have people interested in those. That really is too where I want to go. I like to create, and I'd love to see my shows on air. So that's where I'm heading right now.
So the shows you're working on now, we mentioned the two of them. There's the Carrie Kasem podcast, and there's also Sixth Sense with Nikki Six. Where can people find these shows?
If you just go to carriekasem.com, everything is there. And it's K-E-R-R-I-K-A-S-E-M, carriekasem.com. I'm on Facebook. I'm on MySpace. It's really old. I haven't updated that. But the carriekasem.com will take you everywhere. It's Sixth Sense, to Facebook, to my podcast, which we call the K-Pod. And there's, you know, pictures and videos. I actually have a video of me riding the Sturgis on my motorcycle from last year. So I think that video is up at sixthsense.com. I did the trapeze this year for my birthday. I took 10 of my friends and we all did the trapeze. So I have that video up. I put little just kind of tidbits and little, I guess, sections of my life up there. And it's fun, and everybody that writes me on Facebook, I get back to myself. People say, "Is this really you?" And yeah, it's me. So yeah, I really enjoy communicating with people. I think that's kind of my talk radio background in me.
Well, clearly there's never a dull moment in the life of Carrie Kasem, and I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on our program.
No, thank you for having me on.
Carrie Kasem, you can check out her website at carriekasem.com. You can just go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0053, and you can find links to Carrie's website. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, and we'll have just in a matter of moments Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, to share a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. But before we get to the break, just want to say very quickly, thanks to David S. and Richard R., both of Montreal, and Ramon S. from the Netherlands for their generous donations to The Stuff File program. It's very much appreciated, and it goes a long way in helping to keep this program up and running. And you can donate if you'd like to. Just go to the Stuff File program website, and you'll find the donation button right there on the front. Okay, there you go. More Stuff File coming up in just a bit.
Got something for the mailbag? Send your email to mailbag@thestufffile.com. And remember, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's mailbag@thestufffile.com. Stick around. There's more Stuff File coming your way in a moment. What are they saying about If the Rains Don't Cleanse? New York Times bestselling author David Mixner says, as a writer and advocate for Africa, I could not put down Ben Patrick Johnson's If the Rains Don't Cleanse. Aubrey Hooks, the U.S. ambassador to Ivory Coast, says, fascinating and hard to put down. If the Rains Don't Cleanse is CNN breaking news disguised as historical fiction. If people can't put it down, then why haven't you picked it up? If the Rains Don't Cleanse, the tale of missionaries in 1950s Belgian Congo is loosely based on my own parents' lives. It's available online, including Amazon.com and Amazon.ca. I, Ben Patrick Johnson, want you to read this book. My mother, Avidale Johnson, wants you to read this book. Now remember, this is a woman who survived as a missionary in Congo half a century ago. She is tough. Now do not make me send her your way. If the Rains Don't Cleanse, get it now, or deal with my mother. From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, the Stuff File presents the Gabby Cabby, direct from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge in the city that never sleeps, New York. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And once again, we do indeed have Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby from New York City, live from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. Hello, sir.
Hello, live from the very hot streets of New York City.
Yes, the very hot and busy streets of New York City. And one of the things I want to get to right away, stuff that's been in the news for a little bit of time now and causing controversy everywhere, that whole mosque madness. Now, I understand there was actually an ad opposing the planned mosque near Ground Zero appearing on buses.
Yeah, but let me explain it to your nice listeners about what's really going on. This is another classic example of, as they say, the established media, meaning the Washington Post and the New York Times and the Associated Press, and especially the CBC and the BBC, and I could go on, turning this into something, and it's really a nothing, and let me explain to you why. First of all, New York City has more than 200 mosques in it, which is something I'm sure many of your listeners don't even know. There is already a mosque about four blocks away from the World Trade Center site, and there is a mosque 12 blocks away from the World Trade Center site. We have thousands and thousands of Muslims living in New York City, and I don't know of anyone who's ever been abused since the 9/11. So the relationship is absolutely excellent between Muslims and non-Muslims. So what is the issue then? The issue is more so revolving around this particular imam than, and this is the reality of the situation, than where it's being put. That's the second issue. Let's just put that aside for a moment. There are some people who say he has links to terrorists. There are some people who say he's getting his money from strange foreign lands and things like that. Until that gets cleared up, one way or the other, we can't really get to the argument as to whether or not it should be put in that particular spot. There are some people who feel the spot is no big deal. And then, of course, you have the cops and the firemen and the families of the World Trade Center attack, you know, the surviving members of the families, who will not let this thing go. So no matter whether or not it turns out that this guy's hands are clean, and there's no reason we can object to the site being there, they will object and go on. So that's the mess we're in right now. But it's really being soaked up by the press.
So 200 mosques in New York City. Now, Sarah Palin mentioned 100, so she's missed half of them.
She said what?
She said 100, she's missed half of them then.
Well, that must be the 100 she went to visit. I'm telling you there are 200 because that includes also mosques that are in apartments, that are in houses. Okay?
Right.
The fact of the matter is they're all over the place. 15% of the kids in the New York City school system are Muslim. I don't know. I mean, was her intention to diminish the number of Muslims? We're probably the largest Muslim city, well, I don't know if I can say in the world, but maybe so, that isn't in a Muslim country.
Right.
So the point I'm only making here is that I want your listeners to understand that for anybody to imply that this hostility of New Yorkers against Muslims is complete crap. And the reason for that, if all the Muslims walked off their jobs tomorrow, we would starve to death. And we certainly wouldn't be able to get a taxi cab. I mean, a great percentage of the workers in the taxi industry are Muslim, and a great percentage of the people in the food industry are Muslim. That doesn't mean there aren't doctors and lawyers and what have you, but they're a very important part of the city.
Excellent point. On to another issue. I understand your governor is signing a bill that will allow divorce to be easier?
Yeah, it's going to be a lot easier. All you're going to have to do is walk around your wife three times and say, I divorce you, I divorce you, I divorce you. No, I'm only kidding. What they're doing is they're putting into effect no-fault divorce, which New York has not had. So up to this point, if somebody was going to get a divorce, you'd have to go into court and say the other person was an adulterer or the other person beat you. You know, all kinds of terrible things, because otherwise you weren't getting a divorce. Well, now New Yorkers will be able to go into a courtroom to people, of course, and say, we don't like each other. And the judge would say, oh, okay, and that's the end of it, which I think is a more reasonable thing than getting people to lie. It was, in its day, a lot of fun to go to family court and watch the people, you know, applying for a divorce and listening to their outrageous stories, but I guess that bit of entertainment is gone for good.
Mm. Now, earlier you did allude a little bit to terrorists, so let me swing back to that just a bit. I understand that a terrorist is coming to town in New York City, Lindsay Lohan.
Well, you know, it's like there was a big thing, and you know, so people who follow MTV and People Magazine and all of that, they just go on and on about her. Whereas, really, the average person, I'm sure it's the same with most of your listeners, don't really care about it one way or another. So the New York Post was making a big thing about that she was moving to New York. And the attitude among most New Yorkers, at least the ones that I know, is, who cares? So, sorry, Lindsay, it's of no interest to anybody, whether you come here or not. But I will tell you this, she's not going to be able to get away with a lot of stuff you might be able to do in California. New York is a lot stricter about things.
Hmm. Now, I remember back in the day, in the 60s, I used to come to New York frequently because my grandmother lived there. And I remember the New York when I was a kid from movies that I saw. So when I actually went to New York, and she lived in Brooklyn, I was looking hither and yon for an organ grinder. Couldn't find one.
Well, you were born a little bit too late for that. That's an earlier era, maybe 20 to 30 years. And here's the deal on that. At one time, the organ grinders that walked on the streets of New York and they had a little monkey attached to them with a leash were all Italian. I mean, that was just the nature of it. You know, sort of like from the Marx Brothers with the guy that goes honk, 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 honk.
Right.
You know, that type of thing. But it really was an Italian type of thing. Well, our mayor at that time, a guy named Fiorello LaGuardia, catch that very Italian name.
Right.
He claimed that they were blocking traffic and getting in the way of people, so he banned them. That's sort of like banning the Sopranos, you know, because it doesn't give a good image to Italians. So that's the real reason he did it. He just didn't like that association to Italian people. Well, now there's some folks who would like to try it again because, you know, we have all kinds of crazy people on the streets of New York. You've probably heard of the Naked Cowboy and all kinds of other, you know, theater. And street theater, I should say. And New York is very lenient about that because, you know, by and large, we don't care. But there are people who are concerned that the monkeys are going to be mistreated like the monkeys in, like the horses in Central Park are mistreated. Well, that's not really true. The horses in Central Park aren't mistreated, and I doubt that the monkeys are going to be mistreated any more than they are in one of New York City's zoos, because it seems to me if you're making a living out of using a horse or a monkey, the worst thing you could do to mistreat them, and also New York City has so many eyes. I mean, you just start smacking your horse, or you start smacking your monkey, and everybody in the world's going to see it. So as long as I'm assured that the monkeys are going to be taken well care of, I don't have any problem with them. As a matter of fact, I'm thinking maybe I'll do it myself. Hmm.
And yes, ladies and gentlemen, you did hear Peter Franklin say, slapping the monkey. On to other things. I understand work is to be done on the famous Brooklyn Bridge.
Well, it was famous when they finished it in 1883, and it was probably and still is one of the most famous places in the world. As a matter of fact, at that time, they weren't even sure that it was going to stay up. They had elephants walk back and forth across it to test it, which was kind of silly because the elephants really didn't weigh that much. And remember, at that time, they didn't have all the building gadgets and everything that we have today to build it. So anyway, it's time for it to be refurbished. So you're going to start seeing a lot of this on your television sets all over the world because it is quite a monument to mankind's endeavors. And in addition to that, it's now going to make it a living hell to drive from Manhattan to Brooklyn or from Brooklyn to Manhattan because there are two other bridges, but you are really taking away, you know, 33 1/3% of the available roadway, so to speak. So it should be an interesting year or two. We'll see what happens.
And I want to close off on a baseball note, and that is I understand that Francisco Rodriguez got into trouble in the clubhouse with his father-in-law?
Yeah, the thing is, people do get into fights in family, and they do beat up people. I don't know how often it is that somebody beats up their father-in-law. But once again, professional sports has turned their back on, I think, a systemic problem in professional sports of having either sex fiends or bullies not being punished. And in this particular case, for beating his father-in-law up right after the Mets game at the stadium there, he's been punished. You ready for this? 2 days suspension, which now, by the way, are over and done with. So that's all that he had. As to whether the cops are going to pursue it, I hope they do, because I don't think people should go around beating other people up. And you'll find invariably when one person beats up another person in this world, they knew going into that fight they were going to be able to beat up that other person. So it's not really a fair deal.
Hmm. And that's Peter Franklin once again, the pursuer of truth, justice, and the American way. The only thing he's missing is a cape. And people can still get tours from you?
Yes, they can by going to Gabby, GABBY.com, or if they just need information about New York City, since I'm a Mr. Know-It-All, just send me an email.
I'll have them do that. I thank you very much, sir, for being on the program once again.
My pleasure.
Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby from New York City, here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we're almost done with this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, but we do have one more piece of business, and that would be the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
A German bank robber led his pursuers straight to him after taunting police in an email over their efforts to catch him. Authorities in the southern city of Würzburg said the 19-year-old sent emails to police and two newspapers to point out factual errors in the reporting of his bank raid in the town of Rottingen a week ago. According to Daily Bild, he mocked the police for getting his age, height, and accent wrong, then pointed out he escaped in a car, not on foot. His game of cat and mouse went all wrong, said a police spokesperson. Police traced his email and arrested him in a gambling hall in Hamburg just a few hours later. He was completely shocked, said the cops. Why would someone who actually got away with a bank robbery mock the police officers and also the media after he does get away, leading to his own capture? One reason and one reason only. He's an idiot.
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, number 0053. The website is thestufffile.com, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the What's On page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and again, that's 0053. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com, and stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, that's peter@thestufffile.com. Or you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/PAHolder, and Twitter at twitter.com/PAHolder. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJMedia.com, and over the air on World FM 88.2 in New Zealand and Gold FM 90.5 in Singapore. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. No animals were harmed in the production of this program, except, of course, the tasty ones. Good night and pass the paprika.